Thanks for tuning in to the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic, where we inspire, educate, and provide advice and insights around those who are in the sports business and entertainment industry. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And enjoy today's episode. Welcome to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Excited for our industry insights series with the Clubhouse. Another episode here with two guests today in Stacy McGraner from the San Jose Sharks and Travis LaDolce from the San Francisco Giants. We're going to get into a little bit of both their career paths as well as the world of marketing and fan experience within the world of sports and how it's changed and evolved over the years. But nonetheless, Stacy, Travis, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So let's kick it off. Travis, I'll start with you. You are currently working for the Giants, where you came from the rival across the bay with the A's. You know, you see from time to time a player will switch from a rival, but you've clearly made that switch on the business side. What's that like? And, you know, you were at the A's for 17 years, so it's not like it was a short stint and you said, you know, I'll go to the other side. But, you know, you've been in baseball for a while, director of marketing. What is that? What does that role look like and how did you get there?
I started out in the ticketing world. I was lucky enough to get hired by a gentleman named Steve Finelli, who's been a friend and mentor since I got into the business. He really nurtured me throughout and taught me a lot of things and helped me along the way. Ticketing was great. I ultimately really wanted to go into marketing, and through some luck and a lot of work and sort of good timing and internet 2.0 and all of that sort of stuff, was able to sort of graduate into the marketing world. And I've been in marketing for at least 12 years now. I mean, marketing for a Major League Baseball team is not so dissimilar between two teams. And a lot of what I do is really like brand equity and trying to sell tickets, whether it be a lot of single game tickets, but certainly groups and memberships and things of that nature. So it's not so dissimilar between two teams, really just trying to activate a fan base, motivate them to come to the ballpark, find new fans, try to lure them in and make sure that they become lifelong fans of your team. But yeah, it's been a fantastic transition between what was a really great upbringing and learning a ton in the business and really being able to apply it to a champion brand and bring people into Oracle Park.
I think it's kind of one of those funny things where it's a misconception in not only sports, but business as a whole, where someone goes, well, I don't want to do sales, but I want to do marketing. And then it's like, well, you're selling and marketing. I mean, that's the whole point of marketing, right? Did you ever get that at one point or another in your career?
I mean, so I talk to a lot of younger people and they'll be like, oh, you know, what's the right fit for me to try to get into the business? And I knew from the very beginning, like, I can work in ticket operations, but I couldn't work in ticket sales. For me to pick up the phone and call individuals and try to get them to come to a game, like, that is just not my forte. But creating social media, helping create ads, creating motivational wording, creating all of the things that surround marketing to try to motivate people in, that is much more my forte. But it's all sales. It's all part of the sales umbrella. You know, what activates the human mind to want to engage in something, like, all of that comes into play. And there's a lot of push-pull and all of that. So it's, marketing is very much a sales position. I agree.
Stacy, you've been able to work in a couple of different sports. Talk a little bit about just your career path and where you've gotten to. Your title is also a little bit different, that you don't maybe see in sports often, CX experience, which I'm imagining that's the consumer experience, you know, side of things. But go ahead there.
Yeah. So kind of just like Travis said, I actually cut my teeth in what is now known as inside sales in Major League Baseball. So I was down in Tampa, is kind of where I got my first start. It was very apparent to all of us that I was terrible at like about sales. I just was never going to be good at it. But to the commentary, it was also very apparent, I think, from day one that pretty much every job inside any team business office, you are still selling. So you might be exactly what Travis described on the marketing side, really creating the emotional attachment to the brand. Even our ticket operations group is making sure that we're selling, to, you know, getting tickets ready for the groups and things like that. So, but I did find a pretty good and comfortable path on the retention side. So while I wasn't necessarily good at outbound sales, inbound renewals and things like that, I loved it because that was just making sure that everybody was having a great time and that they were going to be back for the following season. And if there was a reason that they didn't want to come back, it was our responsibility to figure out that why and hopefully fix it. So spent some time on the retention side in Major League Soccer, so with the Columbus Crew and also the San Jose Earthquakes. And then from there, stayed on the retention side, but also worked in the NBA for the Orlando Magic. And it was while I was in Orlando that I actually got exposed to what is now a lot more commonplace, I think, than it was then, but the business strategy vertical. So really understanding how we're using data to support every other facet of the business. In my case, it was specifically ticket sales, marketing, and ticket services or client services, as it was known there. So the more involved I got in that space, the more enticing it seemed because it was still relatively new and there was so much to learn. I also wanted to come back to California. So that was kind of the prompt to actually leave the Magic. And I was very fortunate to land what was then a marketing coordinator role. And I had never really spent time sitting on the marketing side of the business. So it was a new vertical and we were really starting to actually explore personalization and what that looked like and using data to do so, so that we were making sure we were serving up the right products to the right people at the right time and then get them moving through the business ladder as efficiently as it would be possible for them. Throughout the next couple of seasons, I sort of stayed in that space, excuse me, but wound up getting to sit through a presentation in which there was a lot of discussion about using business psychology and then also behavioral economics and getting people to make decisions. So Travis, you touched on it and that's speaking my language for sure. And it was in that space that I told my boss, I said, I think we need to be more active there. So out of that, CX or customer experience was born. So I actually spend a lot of my days now doing, I say it's more similar to the tech CX than what you would traditionally think of as customer service and sports. So I do a lot with focus groups. I do a lot of survey research. I do a lot of observational studies. We do customer journey maps and things like that because it's really important to us that we understand what's going on with our fans so that when I sit down in meetings, I'm showing up as kind of their proxy so that when we're starting to make decisions, like right about now, this time of year, as we head into the off season, okay, what worked really well for 23, 24, and now what do we need to adjust for 24, 25, and why from the fans' perspective?
Fascinating. And I love the fact that you were, you know, bouncing around the country from Columbus to Florida to then California and back. You know, Travis, you've been able to build an awesome career in one market, which is also a unique career path as well. But just want to point out the fact that both of you have had different journeys in different places and it's all been possible. Right. And so I think that's one thing that a lot of people think about is like, well, I can't build my career in one market. Not necessarily true. You can't, you know. But then all other times you do have to move to go for that right opportunity to Stacy's point. And then, you know, eventually maybe figure out your way back. But, you know, Travis, I want to go back to, you know, your comment about marketing and selling tickets and whatnot. As you talk to other colleagues around the business, how does baseball differ from maybe other sports as it relates to the marketing side, right? Like, your role at an NFL team, probably very different, I would imagine.
Volume. It's volume. We have so many games, 81 home games, plus probably an exhibition game, plus, you know, spring training, playing 15 home games down in Arizona. It's a lot. Like, you know, scarcity is, it's classic supply and demand. Scarcity helps your business. So if you're playing, you know, 6, 7, 8 home games a year, like the NFL, then you know, your tickets are probably worth more. You can sort of gear up. It's on like the perfect day of the week, all that sort of stuff. A lot different when you're working at a baseball team and you've got to get 7 games in a row. And some of those are maybe on a Monday or Tuesday night, which are a little bit harder to sell because people have lives and work and school and all of that sort of stuff. Still a great night to come to the ballpark. Let me preface that. But it is, you know, a little bit harder to motivate people to come to those games than maybe a weekend game. So, and then, you know, it's uncontrollable what teams come in. Maybe the perfect team comes in on those days, but not the weekend games where you can really like bolster sales. So it's unique, and it's a constant on, you know, marketing on, situation where you're never in any sort of lull. You're constantly trying to push forward, look ahead a couple weeks during the massive buying cycle of like, how do you motivate people to come to these next games? And then as soon as those games have arrived, there's a whole nother set that you need to sell. So you're really trying to get a lot of information out there, promotions, games, teams, value, all of that in a short period of time. And it's constant for 6-7 months straight.
What's one of the call it levers, whether that's text, email, social, digital, what's one of the levers that you've seen recently kind of been like, okay, this is something that is new or different and can work, as opposed to maybe how things have been done in the past?
Depends on the funnel. So like, we use our organic social media at the Giants as like upper funnel, interest marketing. We don't spend a lot in paid digital on upper funnel. But as you pull people down, we're spending more in digital than we ever have before. I remember maybe 10 years ago, and at the other club I was at, where, you know, we were trying to divide up the marketing budget and determining like, you know, what should go into traditional advertising, what should go into digital, and really like, having a lot of trepidation from executives about 10% of the marketing budget going towards paid digital. And now it's over 90%. So it's this massive shift in about a decade's time. And it makes a ton of sense. Like, you can actually get the return on ad spend. You can change things very quickly. You can reach new audiences. You can prove that a lot of it's valuable. So when young folks ask me, like, what is one of the things that I should look into when I want to get into the marketing business? I'm like, understand data. You don't have to be a data scientist to do marketing, but you need to know what questions to ask of the data scientists that are at your team. And so like understanding what audiences are there, the availability, like, are you reaching the numbers that you need to? Are you performing the way that you should? How do you shift that? What is the A/B testing? All of that becomes very important. So paid digital in all of its various forms, display, SEM, paid social, all of that becomes very valuable. And then just the newest piece, I'd say, to sort of add to the entire mix, which can both be upper funnel and lower funnel, is influencer marketing and working with nano and micro influencers in your target area to really motivate people to come to games or just find awareness in the entertainment offering that you have.
Yeah, the data piece is huge, as you mentioned, and we'll get to that in a second with Stacy. But I think to your point about the influencer marketing and the budget, you know, kind of changing, I would imagine it's one of those things now with the influencer marketing piece where it's like, well, you could spend a lot of money if you wanted to, you know, to, again, try and beef that up. But then there's also like, okay, realistic of budgets and what you spend. And, you know, Travis, I would imagine, even though the percentages changed over time, maybe the amounts didn't necessarily change over time. You know, and let's be real, digital social is a lot more expensive than maybe the traditional marketing.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely bidding for spots, and you know, you're trying to get eyes, and all of that becomes more expensive. And but it's still very powerful. And as far as influencer marketing goes, you know, you could think it like baseball, hockey, they're nationally known teams, nationally known brands, but really what you're trying to sell is to your local market. I mean, you could do a mega influencer and, you know, have, let's just say the Kardashians like pump the Giants all over the country, but it doesn't do it. It does a lot for brand equity, but maybe it doesn't do a lot for actual sales because we're trying to sell to our target market area, which is Northern California. So finding influencers that can motivate smaller sets of individuals. If we do a direct response campaign with them where they're using a certain promo code, we can see actually what that individual's bringing in. And, you know, maybe there's some sort of rev share there too. So there's ways to activate influencers on a very cost-effective measure rather than feeling like you need to dump, you know, $500,000 into a very famous person that does a lot for brand, maybe very little for ticket sales.
Yeah, no, that's a great explanation there. I think that's super important to understand. Stacy, to the data side, because as someone who's in a data-centric role as well, it's one of those things, Travis's point of, you don't need to be a data scientist, but you need to know what does good data look like from bad data, and how do you ultimately make it into a story and then, you know, story tell it up and sell it up, right? So in your role, you know, you mentioned focus groups and surveys. What does that look like? And, you know, when you're talking about putting those things together, you know, what's the main mode of outreach? Are you doing it via email? How does that work?
Yeah, so I think it depends. And Travis said something that I think is really important. It's, you need to know what questions you're asking. And on the research side, it's, I need to make sure that I'm clear on what the stakeholders are trying to accomplish. So what is their actual desired outcome and what answers are they looking for? Because the last thing I want to be doing is asking questions and gathering information that isn't of service to anyone. Instead, what do you really actually want to know? And then let's go find that out. The other piece too, that I think as we all get collectively more and more intelligent when it comes to data, is also making sure that we're being intentional in what we're collecting. So certainly there's the privacy piece all by itself, but even beyond that, I think all teams right now, we have just this immense amount of data that we really haven't ever necessarily used. And so there's some that now needs to be purged. So in addition to knowing what questions to ask, let's also only be asking for information that we really do intend to use or to utilize for any actual purpose, whether it's for the business or to serve the fans or whatever the case may be. But knowing what you want to know and then asking the right questions to get that information, I think, are the most important pieces. And I feel like that covers quantitative research and qualitative, I think, in both scenarios. Depending on what those questions are, we'll kind of dictate the medium in which we use them. This week, I'm running a total of 4 focus groups, and we're talking a lot about food and beverage because that has become, it's a very interesting kind of plot twist, because on paper, survey respondents are telling us it's not really all that important to us. But when we get people live and we start talking about the food and beverage experience, all of a sudden there's this huge spike in even emotion that's attached to it. And so it is clearly actually very important. So now it's really understanding, okay, what are the drivers here? What are you actually after? And so from those conversations, we're starting to learn that there's a lot of different answers to that question. But getting back to our food vendor, like, here's actually what the fans are telling us. And so we've wound up hitting on a couple data points just in the last day or so that were absolutely fascinating to me. I mean, one, just to give you an example, everyone wants salads, but no one wants them at the front of the buffet line because it slows everybody down. So like things like that start to show up that we're never going to see from an organizational standpoint, because when we're walking things, we're not actually looking at that. So that's the piece too for me, is getting the information directly from the consumer, because their experience is often very different than what we perceive it to be. And we're the expert in a lot of cases, but they're the expert in every case when it comes to the fan experience.
Where's the balance too of also understanding that there's data that you can get in first party versus then working with a vendor and being able to get it third party and through other mediums, that again, you're dealing with a fan base that is somewhat biased, right? Because of who you're going after. So you also, with a grain of salt, have to understand where your data is coming from, right? In that sense. How do you balance the two?
Yeah, so I think for, I would say third party is going to be way more attached to a lot of what Travis was describing. Who is looking for us? Who is seeking us out? What are they looking at? What information are they trying to pull from us? And then how do we push that same thing back out? And then how do we also get in front of people who aren't looking for us, who are new fans, maybe don't even know about hockey yet? So for me, that's kind of the most magical place, I think, for the third party data. And that's really generally, I think, what we're using it for. We also use a lot of that when it comes to partnerships, because we also need to be talking about that data for current and for prospective partners, because we want to make sure that they're aware of who we are targeting and then who our fan base is and how that helps them tell their story of what their brand is, what they're trying to accomplish, and why the Sharks are in support of that. First party data for me, so this is a little bit of a siloed perspective, is really everything that's happening inside our walls. So we've done our part to get people inside the building. Now I want to know everything you're willing to tell me so that I can start to see trends, notice opportunities, see, you know, eventually maybe if, I think at least in Silicon Valley, right, the bug list. So what are the things that are on our fans' bug lists that we can actually then go seek out technologies, new platforms, new partners, new processes, things like that, that'll help us resolve those. And ideally do our part to kind of pioneer what that fan experience looks like. So that's, for me, that's how I think of the two separately and collectively.
As I listen to both of you talk, I'm like, you don't really sound like you're in sports, right? It's more of a, it's truly a business, right? And I think sometimes that's missed a little bit, but also at the same time, you know, you get to step outside or inside, whatever, and see a game going on. And it's certainly a different experience. But with all that said, Travis, Stacey, like, what have you learned? If you just were to reflect on your career this far, like, what have you learned about business in a whole in itself that you maybe didn't think you would learn coming into this industry?
Stacey, you want to go first?
I was just about to offer you that. So I would say, at least for me, I think first of all, it's that really to a comment that both of you made earlier, everybody's selling all the time. And so even though I joke regularly that I'm terrible at sales, I've sold a lot of tickets in my lifetime, even though I have not been officially in the ticket sales world for a really long time. But the other piece of it is a lot of what Travis was describing, like the fact that we all have very similar funnels, and then each of us has a role to play in making sure that we get people kind of moving through it, how they want to move through it, and then how it's in service, certainly of the business. And then the last thing I'll add is that we are, not only do we all run franchises, but now as the world continues to grow, specifically in technology, we also are starting to kind of find ourselves in space that isn't necessarily sports. Like we do a lot with different vendors and different technologies and trying to explore those to the point where we are a lot of times testers. We might be first users. So there are a lot of days where I actually feel like we're technology companies as well, with the intent of hosting a far better in-game, in-arena event.
One of the things that is said quite often in the Giants marketing department that a number of different leaders have said is we're in the fun business. And it's so important to remember, like, it's sports and it's entertainment, but like ultimately we're just trying to bring fun to people. So it is very important that we're doing things efficiently, that we're doing things the right way, that we're doing things that motivate a crowd. But we also have to have fun. We also have to express fun to the fan base, to consumers, all of that. So, I mean, what have I learned over all these years? Like, I feel like the game has changed to some degree. Like, it is much more business, and as Stacey hit on, like, tech. We're a very technologically sound area, Silicon Valley. Stacey's in the heart of Silicon Valley. We're just above it. Like, all of that matters a lot. Like, we need to have, you know, the right tech. Consumers are smart in this area. You know, the loyalties that maybe exist for some of the East Coast or Midwest teams, like, don't quite exist because we have a lot of transplants in the area. We have to put on a good show. So that's where that fun business comes into play. Like, you have to make sure that you have a ton of entertainment value, maybe not even necessarily sports value, a ton of entertainment value in order to capture all of these consumers in your building and then bring them back again, which is the hardest thing to do. It's really hard to bring them in once, but then to get them to come back is like the next step that you need to take, which really bolsters your business. And then one of the things too that Stacey hit on earlier is goal oriented. Orientation. Like, there's a million great ideas inside the front office of a team, and you know, fans bring us a lot of ideas too, but also, is that really motivating the group that we're trying to motivate? What is the ultimate goal of whatever the thing is that we're trying to lay into the process? Is that helping our overall business? Are we spending too much time on one thing in order to motivate a small amount of people? Or is there something that we can implement that, you know, motivates many people? So goal orientation, I think, in any idea becomes so important and imperative to whether or not it gets brought onto the table and into the mix or not.
Yeah. And can I add maybe one more thing, Jake?
Go for it.
The other piece for me, and this is maybe a little bit more a personal note, but it's what I call the goosebump factor. So on days that I'm at work, if I walk out, if I see the ice, if I'm at a Giants game and when I first come through and I actually get to see the playing surface, I still get goosebumps. So we're doing a lot on the business side, but I still get them. And so the one thing that I try to tell everyone is that my hope for everyone is that there is joy and there are plenty of goosebumps in your career. And I think sports for me continues to deliver year after year, season after season, no matter what. And so it makes all of the learning and the doing associated with running a business 10 times more enjoyable for me, because it's driving joy in the world and it's giving me goosebumps and a sense of like real fulfillment. And I think that's really important, regardless of whatever career choice anyone makes. I think it's really important. And as long as the goosebumps are there, you're in the right place.
Stacey, I love that.
That's a great point.
I might have to steal that one. The goosebumps.
Yeah.
Theory.
I love that too. I got into this business because I got out of undergrad and I was like, okay, now I need to go get a real job. Where do I want to work? I'd done a lot of like radio stuff. I thought maybe I'll work in that sort of thing. Maybe I'll teach. And I was like, no, wait, I love professional sports. I live in an area that has all these teams. Baseball is my number one sport. I absolutely love it. Like, there'd be nothing more magical for me than to roll up to a ballpark every single day and be like, this is my place of business. This is where my office is. And, you know, if I want to go eat lunch and look at a baseball field, whether it's empty or full, it's there. And it's never not interesting and magical and engaging. Like, there's still like a love factor with it, which is why I'm about to experience my 23rd opening day. And it's still fantastic.
23rd. I love it. That's incredible, Travis. I mean, I think, you know, as you think about and you're listening to just kind of the two explanations you gave, Travis, I have heard the fun business on this podcast from Pat quite a few times.
Yep.
Let's just say that. Yep. But it's true. It's true. Right. And, you know, the sole fact that Pat was, you know, with the Giants for 30 plus years, started the marketing department there, and yet you're in the marketing department however many years later, and that's still, you know, woven through the culture and the fabric. Like, that's pretty cool. You know, that message can stay, you know, decade after decade like that. You know, as we start to wrap up the episode, I want to get to one other point of like, where does this business continue to evolve and go from here? Right. And, you know, whether it's a piece of technology or some new fan experience that you create or whatever the case may be. What's just one thing you have your eye on and look, the answer may be typical and you might say AI, but
yeah.
But without saying AI, you know, what's one thing you have your eye on as just the business continues to evolve, Travis?
If not saying AI, which like is the fancy answer, but you know, there are some practical applications for AI now. Like it's not robots taking over our jobs. I like wouldn't think of it that way, but there are plenty of practical applications for AI currently. I would say it's personalization. It's really digging into like the individual audience member, whether it be name or interest, and just motivating them with the thing that is most interesting to them. And it becomes uber complicated when you're trying to get as granular as that. But I think that's the true thing that like sort of like bridges beyond just like mass marketing, mass messaging to like, this is speaking to me and wants to bring me to this place. Like, okay, I will engage with that. I think personalization and continuing to dig further and further into that world becomes most important.
Stacey?
Yep, I'm going to yes and the personalization. I'm going to maybe go in a different direction. So for me, I think it's social spaces inside the venues or even outside of the venues. So we're starting to see there's a lot more people want the content for social media. They want to share it with their friends. They want to share it with their followers and kind of become influencers for an event and be able to share all of that. So I think social spaces are really, I don't think they're going anywhere. And I think it's incumbent upon us to continue to develop them and to continue to explore where that can kind of can max out. You know, we all have limited space, but what are we going to do with that space to make sure that we have something in addition to the game that's going on in our buildings?
Love it. All right. Ready for rapid fire?
No.
Go for it. Just like, are you ready for opening day? Kind of, sort of.
Ready as we'll ever be.
That's right. Okay. Favorite ballpark, stadium, arena that you've been to aside from your own?
Pittsburgh, PNC Park.
That's my answer. So then I'll just, since Travis can't say it, I'll say it. So Oracle Park, those are my one, two. Petco is the third. So, and I've been to all of them. So I can say this with some authority.
There you go. We'll go ballpark, stadium, arena that you haven't been to that you want to attend.
I haven't been to New Yankee Stadium. I'd like to see that.
I would say any Final Four, just because I think that any Final Four game in any arena, I think the energy during March Madness is really unmatched. I mean, granted, that's top of mind right now, but a Final Four in which a venue's doing it right, which I think Phoenix is this year, right?
That'll be an interesting one for sure. It's definitely a different experience seeing a basketball game in a football stadium, right? Like just a different perspective. Okay, Stacey, you mentioned food and beverage earlier. You walk into any event, what's the first thing you're grabbing?
I'm looking for something local or something traditional. So like at Wrigley Field, it's an old style. At Dodger Stadium, it's a Dodger dog. In Chicago, I'm looking for whatever. I want to try their local fare. So give me anything. We were in the Global Series a couple years ago and it was in Berlin. And so I just walked as far around as I could looking for potato cakes, applesauce, and a beer.
Travis?
I'm a sucker for a good Impossible burger, so I'm looking for that. Does your venue carry Impossible products? And I'm trying that burger.
Nice. That is definitely a different one. I thought you were gonna say hot dog and, you know, the classic baseball answer, but I like it. All right, last one for you. If there's a sport that you haven't worked in before that you're just curious, you're like, oh, that's really interesting. I bet it's different. That you know you maybe talk to a colleague about or whatever the case might be, could be something niche. What's a business that you're like, oh, that's really interesting?
Formula One.
Oh.
NBA. I am so jealous of their proximity to the court and how quickly you can get on and off the court and have like entertainment options like during every single break. And it's a contained small space. It's unlike ice where it's a little bit harder to get on and off. There's no barriers to the court. Like that just seems like the ultimate fun business play. So that's a cool sort of venue.
Amazing. Stacy, Travis, really appreciate the thoughts, perspectives, insights, sharing your journey and your story in the industry, and welcome on anytime. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode. And I just want to give a quick shout out to ScreenSkins, our presenting sponsor of the Teamwork Online webinar series, the number one branded screen protector that allows you to personalize your screen protector for custom or officially licensed designs that disappear. Get yours today by visiting screenskins.com and use the code LIFO24 at checkout for 20% off today. LIFO24 at screenskins.com at checkout for 20% off. Thanks, everyone.